You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com. Hello, everyone. Welcome to KoopaCast 78. I'm your host, Matt, the Multimedia Manager at PNM and PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. I am joined by two other people. I'm joined by Alex Schremke, a writer.
What's up, everybody?
And Trevor Gould. We don't know what he is because he doesn't have his lower third on.
I know. It's one of those things. But hello to everyone. Thanks for joining us.
I think he's a writer, too, so let's just leave it at that.
Let's create a title for me. Dictator for life.
Dictator for life. Dictator for life, Trevor for Gould. All right, so sounds like we got to start over again. I'm Matt. I'm joined by Dictator for Life, Trevor Gould. All right, and as you may or may not have surmised from reading our topic, we're going to be talking about difficulty in games, specifically games that are just incredibly difficult, like, and they try to, and especially some of these modern games, they like to sell themselves on difficulty. An example is a game I reviewed some time ago, 1001 Spikes. You know, that was going to be touted as like one of the most difficult games to hit the Wii U, and it was. The Swindle was also obscenely difficult. Some claim Shovel Knight is difficult. I think otherwise.
And when you say otherwise, you don't think it's easy.
I do think it's easy.
So you see,
I believe I said
it's easy. There's no in between.
No, for me, Shovel Knight was easy.
Shots fired.
Well, that was. I think I wrote. I'm pretty sure I wrote that in my review too. That I thought Shovel Knight was too easy.
I think that's why they quoted Jay Money's review in their trailer.
You know what? That's fine.
I'm sorry.
And that's why I didn't review the DLC.
You haven't played it? It's free.
Yeah, no, I haven't played. I've just been too busy. I've got project after project just kind of it's starting to pile up a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I need to start knocking those out. So video games have been pushed to the side. Even Mario Maker has been pushed to the side.
That's a whole rant in itself that we can talk about later.
What, Mario Maker?
Yes. That could be the hardest game because there's a lot of crazy people designing these now, ridiculous levels.
Hang on, because
those hard levels.
Alex, you had an opportunity to talk about Mario Maker 2 weeks ago, and yeah, I invited you on that podcast 2 weeks ago where we talked about Mario Maker. But where were you? Playing Castlevania.
Heck yeah!
And I said. And earlier that day, I was like, Alex, you're going to be on the podcast, right? And you're like, yeah, I am. And then I tried to get you, hey, Alex, the podcast is starting. Well, I'm playing Castlevania right now.
There you go. Priority,
so,
man.
You know what? You had your opportunity. You lost it. And now we're moving on.
Oh. Well, you know, you can thank me for being safe from the Vampire Scourge. Just saying. You know.
You better write an epic ritual review for Pure Nintendo.
Yeah. 10 pages.
You owe us.
10 pages.
Oh, man, this is like being back in college again. 10 pages on the color blue.
Dude, ten pages, APA. All right.
The Wikipedia is a source.
Yeah, Wikipedia is not counsel source. All right. We're slowly rolling away from the discussion at hand, which we haven't even talked about yet.
Yeah, it didn't take long.
Yeah.
Nope.
And when reviewing those games, or playing the games is one thing, reviewing the games is another. Where you play, you get into difficult sections, and difficult sections can get frustrating. And when you're playing difficult games and you're just not making your progress, you're grinding your teeth a little bit about that, and it feels like you're not having as much fun anymore. Sometimes in retrospect, you are having fun, like you play it leisurely, there you go. But, other times that's not so much. So my question to you is, do you guys think that making games like too difficult, or games like sell themselves on like this obscene difficulty, do you think that takes away some of the fun that the game could have had otherwise?
I think so. I know there are lots of people that pride themselves on beating the game, like difficult games or games at their highest difficulty. But I always think that having like a ridiculous difficulty should always be like a setting, like should never be forced on the player, because we all have different skill levels. And not only that, sometimes I don't feel like playing a hard game. Or I'll stop playing a game because I'll get to a hard section of like, you know what? I just wanted to enjoy this for the story, and now it's kind of ruining it for me because I can't get past this one really frustrating part. So it's like it's borderline. I think it's a bad game design choice if you make something like deliberately difficult to deliberately, make the player play it over and over again until they perfect it. I think that's more of a bad game design choice. But maybe I'm in the minority, who knows?
My concern is, I think at some point, maybe it's in a response to like a mobile era of casual gaming, but people have made difficulty like the number one priority. And I think especially for some of these indie devs who don't have a lot of experience, I think if you're focusing on that as your priority, you're really taking a risk because, is it going to affect other areas of the game that are arguably more important? I agree with Alex. I think options are always a good thing. But yeah, it's a fine line between a game that's difficult, where you just want to keep going because you're hooked, in a game where you want to throw the controller through the TV and just be done with it. As reviewers, obviously, we have to persevere with some hard games, but the question I always ask myself, if I had paid money for this, would I still be playing it? Or would I have moved on to something else? So it's a tough balancing act.
Absolutely.
Now, like, kind of talking to what you were or kind of touching back on a point you made, Alex, you were talking about like just particular like sections of games that can be like incredibly difficult. Now, do you think that's more forgiving, like near like an end of the game? Because I'm thinking, like, I mean, there are games that are just difficult, like completely difficult all the way around. Like I said before, like 1001 Spikes, this window was pretty difficult throughout the entire experience. But then there are games like near the end, like there's like first party, like think of Mario, Super Mario 3D World, with was it Grandmaster? No, not Grandmaster Galaxy. I mean, no, that is an example, but it's their Star World level. You guys know what I'm talking about, though, right?
I know what you're talking about,
I
that
do.
master course.
That last
I
level,
think
there's.
it's kind of,
Yeah,
I
sorry,
was going
that
to say,
last
I
level.
think that's kind
Jeez, that's bad.
of, go
My
for
point's already made, so you go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's a bit of like a different situation, because near the end of the game, in good game design, it will take all the things that you've learned from your past experiences and then kind of mesh that together to give you a sense of mastery. Like that's the point of good game design, is it's supposed to gradually ramp up in difficulty. The thing with the with that Grandmaster level that you could play is that was like still like optional, if I remember. It was kind of like a side thing that you could do. It's kind of like an ultimate test of like your Mario skills, but it wasn't necessarily required to beat the game. I think that's a good way to go, because you still have that extreme challenge for people that like it. But if you get frustrated with things like that easily, then you don't have to do that. It's kind of like additional content.
Yeah, I think yeah, it's okay towards the end. I'm more forgiving of it, but some of these games, they throw you into the fire right from the get-go. and you don't even really have a chance to even get a grasp of the mechanics a lot of times, because it's just, they're overwhelming you with, you know, it could be a number of things. It could be like just overwhelming you with enemies. Because AI doesn't necessarily have to be smart. If there's just sheer numbers, it could be the dumbest AI in the world, but surround you by enemies, you know, it's just going to overwhelm you. Or things like time limits. A game could be easy, but if they slap on a ridiculous time limit, you know, it could frustrate you. There's a lot of ways to do it, but yeah, I think towards the end of a game, if you've been able to make progress and feel that sense of accomplishment, you know, it's more acceptable.
Right. And that's the whole concept of, like, and you'll see it in some of my reviews. Like, I think I've mentioned it a couple times in some of my reviews of, like, an actual difficulty curve versus, like, artificial difficulty, which is what, you know, Trevor Knox have talked about, where they're throwing more enemies at you. Or maybe another example is you only have, like, one hit point and they're still throwing a lot of enemies at you. Or, you know, like, this, like, dying here costs you 15 minutes of game time. Like, all that stuff, you're not, you know, it's not, like, nerve-wracking to the because it's difficult. It's nerve-wracking because you make one slip up and that's going to cost you a lot of time, or, you know, stuff like that. And I think that's poor difficulty, or poor difficulty design, I guess.
It's funny because we've seen, like, that type of, like, gameplay kind of see, like, a surge of popularity. The games, like, I Want to Be the Guy and stuff, where they'll put things to deliberately kill you. That's actually in game design's school. That was one of the cardinal sins of game design. We called that play it again, Sam, is you shouldn't design your game to deliberately trick someone into, like, you know, dying, so they have to repeatedly play the level over and over again in order to master it. That was actually something you were supposed to avoid. So I find it kind of funny now that that's kind of seen as, like, a popular thing to do now.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have maybe skewed memories of what hard games were. Like, a lot of people talk about NES hard. But I recall reviewing a game. It was a hard game. But what made it extra frustrating for me is it would only save, not after every level, it would only save after every world. So if I got to, like, whatever, the sixth or eighth world and died, I had to go back and replay everything. And that drove me nuts because, frankly, the level designs weren't really that interesting where I wanted to play them over and over. And the developer's like, oh, that's how NES games were, you know. And no, to that, some that's... extent that's true, but that's more of a reflection of technology at the time. We didn't have battery backup was new. A lot of games had clunky passwords or none at all, or memory cards were, you know, a thing of the future. I think once technology caught up, people stopped using that. So I find it odd when, like, developers use a technique like that. It's antiquated. I don't think it's really mm-hmm. – it adds difficulty, but it doesn't add any satisfaction, which I think is the key thing. If you're playing a difficult game, you need to have that sense of satisfaction and accomplishment, that drive to keep going. Otherwise, you know, there's so many other games you could be playing.
Right. So, it's funny that bring that up, because you could also argue that a lot of NES games were intentionally made difficult to artificially increase the time you would have with the game because they were so short.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. That's very true. I remember playing a game ridiculously difficult, and I entered a cheat code, and with the cheat code I could beat it in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Without it, I could never beat the game because it's like one life, your energy bar wouldn't reset between levels. It's pretty much any difficult cliche we think of it had.
Mm-hmm. It's just funny because we look back on the past with, like, with nostalgia and rose-tinted glasses, but you also have to remember we were just coming out of the video game crash. You know, there was kind of like a renaissance in gaming, and we were starting to define genres of games, you know. We're going from these simple Atari games, and now we're having, okay, this is the type of things that a platformer should be with Super Mario. And then people started to emulate that and do subtle variances, and that became a platforming genre, you know. So there was a lot of experimentation. So, like, you know, you may remember the game fondly, but you still have to remember that these games were in some ways they were flawed because they were trying to figure out what made these genres work and what didn't.
Yeah. That's true, fine tuning. And I mean, I think that's why, like you say, like, you know, like the Mario games on the NES I love, but the Mario games when they were re-released, like on the SNES in the All-Stars version, they added things like a save feature. Mm-hmm. You know, just because it was a, you know, that's where we were at that point. It's more of a matter of convenience rather than making the game easier, because, you know, obviously if I can play to World 8, I can do it again. But sometimes it's nice not having to replay all that and just going straight there.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it gives them a chance to tweak and adjust them to more modern sensibilities.
And I got, I was looking back on my list of really difficult games, and since we're talking about old games, the rest of my list is actually older games. So I'm just gonna start listing them off, and you can stop me when I hit a game that is like hit a nerve for you, and we can start talking about that. So I've got Lost Levels.
Absolutely.
Ghosts and Goblins.
Oh boy.
Battletoads.
Oh yeah, that was like top on my list.
that's the classic difficulty. Like when you think NES difficulty, you think of that. Yeah, the turbo tunnel where you're going up and down with a little jet ski thing.
Like, pardon my French, I think I just said you know, a PG-13 swear, but you know, that's the kind of difficulty Battletoads has. Mm. It makes you swear.
The game was so hyped too back in the day. I wanted to love it, and I ended up rebuying it for Sega Genesis, thinking, you know, I'll get into it. And boy, it was just brutal. I couldn't devote myself to just memorizing. And I think that's one of the things with difficult games. I want to be able to rely on my reflexes and just my intuition. Some of these games, it's trial and error. You have to memorize, or you're going to fail. There's just no time to react, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, the spike shot's here, and they're gonna shoot darts here, and you gotta, you know, you just know, you just gotta know in advance.
Yeah, you need like Jedi, like foresee the immediate future.
All right. Speaking of Jedi, the next one on my list was actually Super Empire Strikes Back.
Mm. Oh, God. I actually had the entire trilogy. On my list.
All of those super difficult.
Return of the Jedi was not nearly as bad as Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, well, that's true. And, I mean, I liked them all. I owned them all, you know, which tells you I was fond of them. But I thought they just overwhelmed you at times with enemies, and especially, like, respawning enemies. Like, I don't know. I know some people like that. And for certain games, I guess it's okay, but I felt like I could never get a chance to breathe.
For me, it was the boss battles. They had some ridiculous health bars, and like one hit would do like a centimeter of, you know, off of their life bar, and they would stretch all the way across the screen. Like, oh, that frustrated me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you know, you thought, oh, I'll pick Luke because he has a lightsaber, and lightsabers are cool, and.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way to go that game because everybody has guns. And it turns out Han was right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that was the game designer's thing. Maybe they saw that whole thing about or where Han said in New Hope, which was it? I know this isn't going to give me any kind of coolness points, but something, something is no match for a good blast at your side. Something like that, right?
Oh.
Hokey trick.
Ancient religions and hokey mind tricks or no, something like
hokey,
that.
Yeah, hokey tricks. Yeah, something like that. Like ancient religions and hokey tricks or no match for a good blast at your side.
Yeah. That's close enough. Yeah. And when George Lucas, he probably is changing the quote for the next re-release anyway, so.
Exactly. He's saying that while Greedo shoots at him.
Yeah. Greedo shoot first.
Exactly.
Oh, Greedo did. Han's not a killer. Come on. It was a split second earlier.
Yeah, and I mean, why is nobody on the fact that he dodged a laser bolt? Like, it's supposed to be moving at the speed of light, right? And like, he just moves his head and he dodges it, and then he shoots him, and then it's like no big deal. To me, that's way more awesome than just shooting him.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We're going to get some email for this.
Probably.
Well, too bad. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, we were talking about Super Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, what I mean, that game. Oh, Ninja Gaiden was next.
Ooh, man.
For the NES.
I think that one is a perfect example of, like, respawning enemies, making things difficult for, like, no reason. Mm. Oh, also, I like your lower thirds there. Nicely done.
Thank you. It's good to have some visual humor. And for those of you listening on iTunes, you can go check out youtube.com/purenintendo to check out this awesome visual humor.
You'll be glad you did.
It's funny with Ninja Gaiden. I think it was Ninja Gaiden 2, Nintendo Power did a big strategy guide for it. And, you know, you think of the type of games that need strategy guides, like they did one for Final Fantasy, big RPG, Mario 3, big adventure, but you wouldn't think of like an action-oriented game that would actually, like, I guess, need like a big guide, but that's what they did, you know, so people could, you know that, okay, there's going to be an enemy right here, and you have to, you know, hit the button exactly at that time, or...
Yeah, and that's another memorization thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
You have to memorize the level.
A ninja must be master of his surroundings.
All right, next one on my list is Zelda 2 Adventure of Link.
Yeah. That's a game, I think, and I don't know because I haven't replayed it in the longest time, but I think that's a game that's benefited just from modern touches, I think, like, by having things like restore points. I think that takes out a lot of the frustration with that game. I think if they had a better save system, that could have been a lot more better received, I guess.
Yeah.
I know it's got fans, but it's
system, better dungeon design, more versatility in attack and like attacking.
Mm. Well, it's tough because you fail, and it's like, you know, how much do you feel like doing over every time you fail?
Well, that was something like that game, you were severely punished for getting a game over, because not only would you have to go back to the starting point, but all that experience that you'd be gaining would be lost. So if you were like super close to leveling up and then you died on accident, then all that was lost and you'd have to grind all the way back up or beat a boss.
It was a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but the end game I have a big problem with, because
spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, you know, for a game that came out in 1988. the gauntlet they have you run through to get to the final dungeon, it's almost required for you to save all the extra lives in the overworld for that point specifically. Because if you collect them before, that it's one and done. You collect that life and then you're done. But you almost need them for this final gauntlet you go through. Because I remember there's like a mountain pass you have to go through where guys will literally pop up from like these giant wooden gates and pelt rocks at you, and they're almost impossible to dodge. So you're going to potentially lose a life or be severely damaged by the time you get to the dungeon. Then you have to make your way through said dungeon with some of the most difficult enemies, fight the Thunderbird mini-boss, which you need a special spell to damage, and it was very difficult to hit. And then you could get the final boss. It was so much challenge at the end. It was ridiculous. Like, I have no shame saying that I beat it on the 3DS using save states, just because I didn't want to have to go through all that nonsense just to try to relearn how to beat one mini boss before said boss. You know, there's not enough time for me to get practice in, so I can get better.
If that game,
that final dungeon was awful too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry.
If that wasn't a Zelda game. I'm sorry, Matt.
Oh, that's all right. I was going to say that final dungeon, just I wanted to touch on that real quick. If you, in the very beginning of that dungeon, if you went left instead of right, you'd be going down the wrong path. But you could go so deep into that wrong path. I think that wrong path is like 10 or 20 rooms deep or something like that. So by the time you go through it and realize, oh, you've hit a dead end, then you have to spend like another like hour maybe climbing back up there and probably dying just to go down the right path again. Yeah. Which was even longer than the wrong path was.
I was thinking if that didn't have Zelda in the title, like say that they called that like Iron Sword or Faxanadu or one of those other Zelda 2 type games, would that be nearly as popular? You know, if people could objectively look at the game design without the mythos of Zelda, I don't think that game would be so loved.
No.
I don't think so, but I mean that comes with two things. One is because Zelda exists today, that's why Zelda 2 is more popular, because we know it's like something in a franchise that exists now. But if it was Iron Sword, then I think people would like it, but they'd be like a cult classic kind of thing.
It's like it just suffers from like those problems that we talked about, you know, and something where like if it were re-released today, like we have the save state, so that's kind of like a band-aid over the problem. But if like, you know, they tweak the gameplay a bit, I could see Zelda 2 being, you know, an awesome game, because I enjoyed it. It was just those problems we talked about with the difficulty just kills it.
Yeah. It would be interesting if they redid that to see what they would. I think it would be a big, pretty sizable overhaul.
I still don't understand why they didn't have ranged attacks. Like, did they have any at all?
You could,
I guess by, except for
laser, you could shoot lasers out of your sword, but they didn't go very far.
And that was when you're at full health, though.
Yeah. So once you lose that, you're screwed.
I mean, it was the NES era. I probably said this before, but back then, all their sequels, or a lot of their sequels, were so different from the predecessor. Mario 2, Zelda 2, I think Castlevania 2.
Castlevania 2, that's another one that came on the list.
They were really trying to, I guess, experiment, because it was still new, and see what stuck in the styles that proved popular, are the styles that, you know, by and large are still around.
Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that was like the era of incorporating puzzles into games, but they were just, they were so cryptic, they didn't learn or completely master yet how to give breadcrumbs to lead the player on the right path to solving the puzzle. Like I said, it all goes back to that, you know, they're awesome games because we have nostalgia for them, but, you know, they do have their flaws. You just have to look at it objectively.
All right, I've got one more on my list, and it's not one that I played, but I think it's one that you two have played, which is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That damn level is impossible.
That was
all April O'Neil will say is, "You have my support." It's like, what good is that going to do me if I'm dead at the bottom of a dam? Nothing.
Before it doesn't stop the electrocution.
Yeah.
For me, that was tough because it sort of presents like this linear design where you can pick, you know, any turtle you want and run around. But really, the structure of it was such where if you don't have the right, you know, if you don't have Donatello on a certain level, you're just not going to be able to hit those enemies above you. You know, there's just no way. So, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to pick Raphael, and it just gets slaughtered because you don't have that range. So it gives an illusion of freedom. But when you get right down to it, you need this turtle for this level, and you got to do, you know, in such a way. See, of course, by the time you figure that out, you're like in, you know, a couple hours in, and you're like, oh, I don't want to play anymore. I got to take a break.
Do you remember playing it in multiplayer? That would drive me nuts because then you would only get like one like health item. So you would find like a pizza and then you would have a fight with your friends. It's like, no, I need the pizza more. Don't take it from me.
You're talking about
pizza from me. I'm about to die.
Which you talking about the arcade game, Turtles 2?
No, it was in the NES. They had like pizza icons to pick up for
health. I never played it multiplayer, I don't think. Or I don't remember.
There was a two-player mode, but they don't increase... Like, health is already scarce in that game. But when you do find it, they don't have, like, say, two icons to, you know, adjust for the fact that there are two players. So then you have to get into an argument with your friends, like, all right, who needs the pizza more? Who's going to die?
you reminded me of something, not Turtles, but some games that have done multiplayer, because you would think by virtue of having more people, it would be easier. But I played multiplayer games where they actually will shrink your health bar or make you share a health bar. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, not only is this not easier, in some ways this is actually harder.
Yeah, it destroys friendships.
Yeah, the one that makes you share a health bar, that's what makes you hate your friends.
Mm. I'm dragging this dead weight.
And, all right, I figured let's go ahead and make the shift away from really difficult games and talk about some easy games, perhaps maybe too easy. And I actually talked about this with Alex a little bit before, and we pretty much have the exact same list.
Yeah.
Which was Kirby's Epic Yarn, Yoshi's Story, and Skyward Sword.
Oof. I'll give you the first one, maybe, but I don't know about the last two.
Yeah, I mean, Kirby's Epic Yarn is pretty easy to argue because you cannot die in that game.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. I think with Yoshi's Story, it's definitely easy, but I think some of it depends how you play, because, like, with the score system, if you're going for a high score and looking for nothing but melons, I mean, that can be more challenging. If you're trying to, like, do a playthrough and just play, like, you know, level four of each world or whatever, I think that can be difficult, more difficult. Not, I wouldn't even call it a difficult game. It can be tougher, depending on how you play. If you're more focused on you know, scoring, because that has a unique.
See, I would argue that that's just up to the player. If you want to just go and eat every fruit in sight, sometimes you can beat those levels in just a couple of minutes. If you want to go for, like, the all melons run, that's certainly an option, and it does make the game more difficult. But that is completely up to the player, and they don't even tell you about there being 30 melons in each of the levels. That's something that, you know, players have to figure out and discover for themselves. So
Yoshi's Island. Yeah, I mean, Yoshi's Island, the previous game, that had a lot of optional things too that made the game more difficult, but it was still difficult on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that challenge was still there. Yoshi's Story, don't care for the objectives, all that challenge is just completely taken away, and you're just going to breeze right through that game.
I think a Yoshi's Story, almost like an arcade title in some ways, because I think it's the only game that really has a scoring system like it does, where it tabulates your score through, you know, so if that's your focus, you know, if you play for high scores, because a lot of the, you know, the older games, Atari games, arcade games, that was the, you know, there was no end. You just played for points. I think if you're into that, you know, you can, like Alex said, you can make the game more difficult. But I mean, it's definitely, I wouldn't call it a hard game in and of itself.
Yeah, that's very true. And I guess we got to move on to the third one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Speaking of Yoshi, can I just take a minute to talk about Woolly World?
Ooh, sure. I actually have this in my notes, and I skipped past it, and was going to ask you about Woolly World, because I believe you mentioned how easy that game was, if you don't go for the optional stuff, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's definitely not, it doesn't have, like, a Yoshi Island level of difficulty. You know, of course, you're not carrying Baby Mario on your back, so that helps to some extent, but after I had written my review, and I really love the game, I then went and I read some other reviews, because I had been avoiding them for months because I didn't want to ruin anything. And one of the most common complaints I read is that, oh, the game's too easy. But what struck me as odd is a lot of those same reviewers, and, you know, not calling out anyone specifically, but then they would go on to say, oh, the checkpoints are too far apart, or, boy, some of those, you know, flowers or Miiverse stamp things are just impossible to find. Yeah, but, you know, you're saying the game's too easy, and then you're knocking the game for adding the challenge. And I can see, obviously, Nintendo knows what they're doing. They're not going to be overly concerned with stuff like that. But some of these indie devs who rely on critic feedback to, like, shape their next project, if you're a new indie dev and you're reading reviews that are saying your game's too easy, but at the same time your game's too hard, you know, that's got to have to confuse the heck out of you. You know, what do you do? My thing with, like, Yoshi, if you're going to blitz through it like you're playing a new Super Mario game, yeah, it's going to be easy. But who plays the game like that? I mean, who plays a Yoshi game and doesn't try to explore? I don't know. It's just something that struck me as odd, you know, for people to say it's easy and then criticize aspects that made it too hard. It's like an oxymoron.
That's it. Like, how much is it, like, okay, so you said it's not as hard as Yoshi's Island. Where is it standing for, say, like, Yoshi's Story now?
Oh, it's like, harder than
Yoshi's Story. Like,
it's harder than Yoshi's Story. I mean, Yoshi's Story is easy. I mean,
Woolly World Island.
Yeah, Woolly World's got a lot more going on. Yoshi's Story is a short game, and it's pretty straightforward. But yeah, Woolly World's got a lot more content, a lot more, you know, diversity in terms of. Yeah, it's definitely a harder game. I wouldn't call it a hard game, but you know, unless if you're a newer gamer, if you're a kid, or if you're playing multiplayer, it can actually get hard in some ways, even though I think it's easier. But, like, you know, my wife and I were accidentally spitting yarn balls off the back of each other's heads or bouncing off each other. I mean, you can make it a lot, you know, the challenge, which you will. But by the same token, I mean, you can make it ridiculously easy. They have power badges that can, you know, you can skip levels or be invincible. You know, there's a lot of things, but it's all choice. It's all choice. You know, don't criticize a game for being easy if you choose to play it that way. You know, and that's one of my points. You know, like, I skipped, by and large, you know, I checked them out just to know what they were, but, you know, I'm playing on my own file. I skipped them because I didn't feel like I needed them. But it's great that they're there for, like, if I have friends come over and a little kid wants to play. I think that's a really nice option.
Exactly. Options are always the best choice. But I think the question that we really want to know, does Woolly World have fuzzies in it?
They don't make you drunk, if that's what you...
Oh,
well, that's what you do. What's the point of their existence then?
You know, the only thing I can remember is you eat them and you don't get a ball of yarn, because those are the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they don't make you. They don't make the screen warp or make Yoshi spin around like he's.
That should be a staple in every Yoshi game. Is the fuzzies have to be there, and they have to.
It crossed my mind. I deliberately avoided any mention of Yoshi's Island because I feel like that game is held on such a pedestal that, you know, Yoshi will never outlive it. So I made a conscious effort to avoid mentioning that. I think I mentioned Yoshi's Story twice just because that was the last console game, but yeah, that's true. I did miss that.
That's another thing going on to, speaking of Yoshi, when I reviewed Yoshi's New Island, that was one that I think they actually kind of helped alleviate the difficulty of the original Yoshi's Island. Because before, in order to get 100%, you had to, in Yoshi's Island, you had to, like, go through the level flawlessly, collect everything, like, not get hit, have the 30 stars, find all the flowers and the red coins. So you had to do it all in one flawless run, which was cool, but that got incredibly challenging in some of those later levels. What I liked about Yoshi's New Island was you could play through the level, and let's say you missed a couple of red coins, but you didn't get hit, and you found the four flowers. It would save that progress, so if you wanted to 100% that level, you would just have to go back and, you know, just re-get the red coins. That made it much less frustrating to access the hidden levels, and the hidden levels is where the challenge was at with that game. There are some that I still haven't beaten. They're ridiculous, but fun. So I think that game did a really good job with it. And I remember giving the game like an 8 out of 10 when a lot of people were knocking it and saying, oh, you know, this sucks compared to Yoshi's Island. And then when they started giving the game away for free, when Club Nintendo closed, everyone was saying, oh, wow, you know, this is actually a really fun game. It's like, yeah, that's what I said when I reviewed it.
Yeah. That's totally true, though. I liked having that replay, when you replay, not having to do everything. I think that added fun. And I think, you know, just collecting everything in and of itself, you know, I think is a challenge. I know not everybody's into collectathon type challenges, but you know, challenges is different by, you know, by not always about split second reflexes or, you know, mm-hmm. a challenge can be implemented in a lot of ways, and you know, it's subjective, it's your own taste, but I like collectathons, and I liked Yoshi's New Island. I've liked every core Yoshi game, so.
You know, all right. And I kind of want to talk about Skyward Sword, but I feel like we've covered this subject like 8,000 times.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like I know what we're going to cover. We're going to talk about Skyward Sword is too easy. Fee needs to shut up. Something, sure. Something, something. He really talks really slow. The tutorials last forever.
Well, what like exactly? Course, right? If you can take away your frustrations with the game and just really narrow it down into the challenge aspect, I mean, what exactly do you think makes that game so easy? And I imagine you're in comparison to other Zelda games.
Yeah, just really just games in general. Because like I said, the tutorial lasts a good long time in there.
Yeah.
And aside from that,
it's a good long game.
The only thing. It is a long game, but the thing you're really fighting in that game is the controller. And, like, I thought about, like, what if you take away the controller? Like, what if it was, like, flawless? Like, what if, you know, a vertical swing always meant a vertical swing, or a horizontal swing always meant a horizontal swing? Like, they don't throw as many enemies at you in Skyward Sword as, say, other games because of that Wiimote. So, all of a sudden the Wiimote works, but, say, the same amount of enemies are there. You're just going to slice right through them and move on to the next thing. Like, when I fought Garaham again, and I, like, figured out a little trick, I guess, then I just kind of blazed right through him. And none of the other bosses get any, you know, harder from there. And it seemed, I don't know, it seemed very formulaic and, like, wait, this is getting into rant territory.
No, like, what frustrates me about the game is, like, say you're in, like, a dungeon, you walk into a room for the first time, and instead of immediately letting you explore and figuring out the points of interest and making the connections, the camera automatically zooms you. It's like, okay, this is where you're supposed to go. Doesn't this look obvious about what you should do? And then zooms back out and back to you. Like, it kills the exploration because you know right where to go. You know, it directs you too much and it takes the challenge of solving that puzzle away, you know?
Mm. You guys are making fair. You guys are making fair points. Just to play, you know, devil's advocate a bit. Mm-hmm. I think of Skyward Sword. You know, maybe isn't as dungeon focused as say Twilight Princess, but you know, you look at its overworld. The overworld is packed with exploration. It's packed with enemies. It's not primarily empty fields. So
which,
I feel
which
like
game
that,
were you playing again?
That. I'm talking about Skyward Sword in contrast to Twilight Princess, because that's the one that precedes it. You know, Skyward
Sword. Because what's there to explore in Skyward Sword?
Oh, lots. You know, just to even get to a dungeon, you know, the overworld is like a... I'm not talking about Skyloft, mind you, because I know Skyloft's kind of bare. But just to even get entrance to a dungeon, you're traversing, you know, an overworld where there's a lot to explore. There's, you know, enemies all around. You know, you think about that in Twilight Princess, how many enemies did you run into in the overworld? You know, you're riding Epona across, you know, empty plains.
I think that's
by and large. You know, as far as the controls, I mean, I don't know. I mean, 98% of the time I thought they worked great, so I didn't have that issue. But, you know, I think Skyward Sword had its own things like the Twilight Realm. Am I mixing up games?
I'm thinking of the
is that where you get started?
Yeah, the Silent
Realm. Yeah, I thought that was nerve-wracking. I think, Matt, even you'll admit that was kind of...
Yes, I will admit the Silent Realm was my favorite parts of Skyward Sword.
Yeah, so, you know, I think they chose certain areas to focus their attentions on. And, you know, I think if you're looking for more difficult Zelda, that's not your cup of tea. But I think if you're more into, you know, exploring, you know, all the nooks and crannies, slicing things, you know, that's going to appeal to you. Each game has its own flavor.
I just don't remember exploring a lot, or there being a lot to explore in Skyward Sword. I just remember, like, there's a cube here, here's a cube here, here's a cube here. I guess I can get some of these cubes later, but that was pretty much it. And otherwise, it's like you're going through a series of rooms, just as these rooms were outdoor instead of inside of a dungeon.
I guess I'm the type of player, I like to, like, slice every blade of grass, see if I can find every rupee, every heart container. I'm in Skyloft doing all the
okay,
was
that's
it happy
one thing.
Points or was it happy
you're
points?
Like, we just talked about this gratitude points. Is that gratitude crystal? Gratitude crystal.
Yeah.
That was it.
So you know, I think again, I think you can plow through the game and just you know focus on getting from dungeon to dungeon as quick as possible. But you know, I think if you how many hours did it take you to beat Skyward Sword? It probably took us maybe like 70 the
first
time I played it.
It took you 70?
Probably.
It took me at least, it took me like 30 or 40 maybe.
Okay, well see, I think that tells you something right there. You know, I, especially with a big title like that, I really want to explore and soak in the world and talk to, you know, every character and, you know, check out every area on the map and, you know, but there's other games I'm more content just to plow through. I guess if it's, you know, if it's a story-driven game versus a game that relies more on, I don't know. But your points are fair. I mean, I hear you.
Yeah, like, I guess Skyward Sword was so much more of an action story game than it was, like, an adventure game. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that's kind of what the feel I'm getting out of this conversation anyway.
Yeah, well,
it's like you're talking about. I care about the characters. I care about their plights. I care about you know where I'm going and all that. But it's like I'm thinking of the older games and those games. I'm like I'm thinking about exploring and you know what's over here and how look how big this map is. And like the people kind of like take a step back. They're so much more prominent in like say Skyward Sword versus like older games.
Yeah, and that's it with difficulty in general. A lot of it boils down to how you play the game or. Or even what genres you're comfortable in. I mean, we're talking a lot of like action adventure games for challenge, but you know, like on my list, which was mostly NES games, I had King's Quest V, which was a point and click game.
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
And that was a game. If you misused an item early in the game, you could progress hours and hours and hours, get to the end of the game and find out you need that item. And you don't have it. And then what's your choice? You can't reload an earlier save point because, you know, you did it the first hour. You have to restart. For people who don't have that, who aren't into that genre, who don't have that type of thinking, you know, that could be, for me, that's terrible design. You know, with a lot of the Sierra point and click games, it's just like,
You know. You had the most bizarre line of thinking, you know.
Yeah, and that's why I like when LucasArts kind of took over that genre, they didn't punish the player for experimenting and trying out crazy things. But yeah, that's brutal because those could be long games, and you hate to invest a dozen hours into a game only to find out you got to start all the way over, and you might not even know why. What did I do wrong? You know, you have to consult, you know, a walkthrough or something.
There's no walkthroughs in King Quest 5 days.
Well, you got to consult Nintendo Power. You got to call the 800 number.
You got to call your friends and see if they beat King's Quest.
Rack up your parents' phone bill. Call the hotline.
It's not like those type of games transition that great to the NES anyway with the gamepad. I mean, they really need a mouse, so they were already tough in itself. But
I liked Maniac Mansion. I thought that did okay.
Yeah, that's a really good game.
I love Maniac Mansion. Only Nintendo game, just, you know, for a fun fact for y'all, is the only Nintendo game where you can microwave a hamster.
Oh, wait, what are there two versions? There's one version where you can microwave the hamster, and then I think there's another version where they, like, stop that. Am I remembering that right?
No, what it was is originally in the game you could microwave the hamster when they brought it over to the NES. They blocked that feature out for all but two of the characters, so there's only two characters in the game that you can still microwave the hamster. Somehow they missed that. So you can still go ahead and do it if you're playing as that said character.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And then if you go and show, if you show the remains of the hamster to like the monster, then like he'll like attack you, and then there'll be like a tombstone, and you can control an invisible player. So it's like you're like a ghost now.
Yeah, I remember that was like Nintendo PR kind of went into protect mode and we're like, oh, we don't approve of that. I know there was talk of reprinting it. I don't know if it actually did because I don't know if the game was like profitable enough to do another run, but yeah, that was scandalous back in the early 90s.
I
Oh,
got
yeah.
you. Well, we're gonna go ahead and wrap up right now. I did have one other thing I was gonna talk about. We were gonna talk about super guides, but we're about the 50-minute mark right now, and so we got some other things to do after the podcast. So unfortunately, we got to cut it short.
They're okay in moderation, as long as it's a choice.
Yes. But let me turn it off in the options before I start the game.
Exactly.
Anyway, all right. So I want to thank all of our readers for reading our magazine, all of our viewers for watching our stuff on youtube.com/purenintendo. I want to thank Trevor and Alex for joining me on yet another KoopaCast.
It was fun.
Anytime when I'm not playing Castlevania, always a pleasure.
And if you have yourself a question for any of us at the KoopaCast, you can always email us at podcast@purenintendo.com. You can also follow us. We each have our own Twitter. You can find our Twitter handles on our, well, not our staff page, since we're working on that at the moment, but you can see it on our lower thirds.
Most of
Some
us.
of our lower thirds, yeah.
At Trev underscore G1.
Exactly. I'm at purely underscore Matt. Alex, what are you?
Oh, I'm just at Alex Trampy. So I'm not gonna bother spelling that for you guys. Just watch our video of it, the
There
scene
you
I'm
go,
in.
at Alex Shramke, just guess. And all of us together are at Pure Nintendo. So there you go with that. And with that, we will see everybody in 2 weeks.
Bell.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.